Sort of in an impromptu moment at the 7:30 service, I offered this lament. I want to know who created this particular lectionary setting. I want to know their phone numbers. I want to know where they live. It's just terrible. So please pray with me. Lord, I believe. Help thou my unbelief. Make these words more than words. And give us all the spirit of Jesus. Amen. Amen. Singer-songwriter Matt Morris begins his song of lament this way. How many hours, Lord, how many hours will he lay out in the sun? Under the gaze, Lord, under the gaze of Darren Wilson's gun. 4 hours. 4 hours. Is 4 hours long enough for Michael Brown to lay out in the sun? It's been a year today. A year since Darren Wilson killed Michael Brown. A year since Ferguson erupted. And they aren't done yet. Students from here in Berkeley, from the Pacific School of Religion and the American Baptist Seminary of the West, are there now with students from Eden Theological Seminary, studying with activists and theologians, asking the same questions that many in this country are asking. Do black and brown lives matter as much as others? They are standing in the streets, chanting with the crowds gathered there. Tell me what a family looks like. This is what a family looks like. So work with me, would you? Here, okay. The Lord be with you. You know how to do this. Tell me what a family looks like. This is what a family looks like. From Baltimore to Berkeley, people are asking the same question. Do black lives matter? It's been a year and we cannot seem to find an answer to the question. Of course they do, some people state. Then why is it so hard for many, black or brown, to live in this country, is the question that always follows. Maybe if they just pulled up their pants and turned the music down is a common enough retort. Then, as I hope you can see, we are back where we started. A young man walks into Mother Emmanuel AME Church and 9 lives come to a tragic end. The politics of respectability, as it's called, cannot save black and brown lives either. You can be a respected member of our state government, a pastor, a grandmother, and none of that will matter. You can be president of the United States of America, and it won't matter because your race will still be held against you. You fail to signal when you change lanes. You turn your music up too loudly. You dress like a young punk because you are a young punk. You talk back. You exercise your right to speak your mind and nowhere. It gets you nowhere. In fact, it might get you killed, and so you despair. We all despair with Matt again in his song. How many years, Lord, how many years has the freedom song been sung? Under the gaze, Lord, under the gaze of a white man with a gun. 400 years. 400 years, 400 years is long enough under the gaze of a white man with a gun. But our problem doesn't end there. Now, the reach of this thing that we're all wrestling with is larger. The violence, this greed, this fear knows no bounds of race, color, creed, gender. Zachary Hammond, an unarmed white 19-year-old, was killed in a drug bust in a Hardee's parking lot where his friend was found in possession of 10 grams of marijuana. In Berkeley, we call that a party favor. No one said a word except for the Black Lives Matter social media community. There was no outrage from the white community, whatever that is, about the death of one of our own, whoever we are. The All Lives Matter community said nothing. Nothing at all. Why is that? The media, too, was silent. The only stories being published in major news outlets were about how there were no stories published in major news outlets. We know how to sell column inches and get people to click on our websites, don't we? What do we think is normal? What have we become accustomed to? What do we think is necessary to maintain an orderly society? What do we think is just and fair treatment? What do we believe is beautiful, good, and true? Does an orderly society necessitate the deaths of its young women and men? This is our sad truth. Oh, my daughter, oh, my son, would that it were me. Our voices are silent. Or we're fearfully sitting at home, grateful that it's not us, that it's not our son, our daughter. The power of empire, my friends, is seductive. King David strove for it. His son Absalom longed for it. This is a tale that rivals the Game of Thrones in its chaotic violence. There is rape, incest, fratricide, plain old murder, warfare. The kingdom is in an uproar. 20,000 are killed that day. There is no one who is innocent. There is no one who is good in this tale. There is no helpless victim. And yet Absalom hangs from a tree, executed by those who King David charged with his son's safety. They took it upon themselves to execute him. Guilty or not, insurrectionist or not, they took power into their own hands and executed Absalom. This is called lynching. After the clamoring for power, lives are destroyed. Heartbroken, a king wails. O Absalom, my son, would I have died instead of you? But he didn't, and he's still king. I've been pondering this story, of course, the death of Absalom, David's hubris, and the brokenness of our social systems all week. What if we looked to the death of each and every victim of violence as our son or our daughter, the person with whom we would readily change places if we could? The body hangs lifeless from the tree, and it is your child. Weep. For your soul has been crushed and your future is uncertain. You have broken covenant with God. Weep, wail. It is your daughter dead in a jail cell. It is your son's body lying for 4 hours in the streets. How many hours, Lord, how many hours becomes your song, your lament? To live in a covenant is always a choice. And it's a choice we frequently avoid making. Our national story is not a new one. Our predicament is not unusual, nor are the choices we're being offered particularly unusual. As people of the Christian faith, especially, we should recognize what is afoot in all of this. Those of us who gather week after week and hear the story of a man executed by the power of the status quo should find none of this surprising. Jesus wanted us to see past the false promises of the power that we call empire in all its social forms, political or religious. Instead, he wanted us to broaden our vision. Empire demands the deaths of its young people to keep order. I am the bread of life is an invitation to see a larger world than what empire can promise us. It is a world where hunger is satisfied and thirst is quenched. This is the covenant that Jesus envisions. This is the fruit of our baptisms. To live into this covenant is a choice we all must make every moment of our lives. Will we live into this covenant or won't we? Do we have strength for today and hope for tomorrow? There are people in the streets begging us to choose to live into the covenant. They are begging us to live into the life Christ proclaimed. They are begging us to live into love. They are begging us to live into truth. They are begging us to create a life where black lives matter as much as white lives and where empire does not have the last word. They are begging us to speak out. They are begging us to stand up. They are begging us to rise. Church, rise, they cry. Be resurrected, they cry. Be imitators of God as beloved children and live in love. Punks and prostitutes followed Jesus. People who likely had 10 grams of some first century something in their pockets while their pants hung down too low followed Jesus. They played their music too loudly. They marched. They caused trouble, but so did he. He was accused of false teaching. He was accused of public disruption. He was accused of insurrection. They marched and sang. He was executed. His body hung from a tree, and yet he rose. The stone was rolled away, and he rose. Friends of God, take, eat, live in love. This is the bread of life. This is God's insurrection. Amen.